to the trophy room. Over the door, a sign read, Awards and Honors. The door was propped open, so he slipped noiselessly inside. It was a dim, solemn room, smaller than the main hall. Like the hall, the space was illuminated by an enormous chandelier, this one with blown glass arms in the shape of octopus tentacles, each sucker dripping with crystals, as though droplets of water clung to them. The walls were covered with a collection of plaques and medallions that must have been given to students at the Collegium. Cole was entirely alone. He took a turn around the room, glancing at the pictures of mages on the walls, wishing for a window where he could look at a fish or something to pass the time. He was sure Celia would be along in a minute. After several minutes passed, he took out the note again and reread it. Maybe he'd misunderstood. Maybe she'd written that she'd meet him in 15 minutes or an hour. But no. The note didn't specify any time. After a few more minutes, he decided she wasn't coming. He felt unexpectedly glum. If this was his first date, it was a bust. Celia had probably written the note and then forgotten all about him and found someone else to dance with. Someone who actually could dance. Maybe she was dancing with Jasper. Or she was waltzing around with an impressive gold-year student who could tell her all about his achievements, and she was so mesmerized that she'd stood Call up. Later, he'd meet her outside the magisterium to walk havoc, and she'd wave it off. "I was going to meet you," she'd say. "But you know how it is when you meet someone who's actually interesting. Time just flies." Call looked at his reflection in the glass of a trophy case. His hair was sticking up. Probably Call would be alone forever, and die alone, and Alistair would bury him in a car graveyard. The door opened. There were footsteps. Call whirled, but it wasn't Celia standing there. It was Tamara and Aaron. "What are you doing in the trophy room?" Tamara asked, frowning. "Are you okay?" Aaron looked around, puzzled. "Are you hiding in here?" Cole was entirely sure that nothing like this, being stood up and humiliated, had ever happened to Aaron. He was doubly sure nothing like this had happened to Tamara. Come to think of it, what were Tamara and Aaron doing here together? What if they'd been going off to do some kind of hand-holding, dating thing together? It was bad enough that Call was sure Tamara would always choose Aaron first, but if they were dating, then Aaron would always choose Tamara, too. "Are you okay?" Aaron asked, frowning in confusion at Call's silence. "Your dad told us he saw you come this way." Relief washed over Call that they hadn't come here to be alone, but to find him. Now all he had to do was figure out how to explain what he'd been doing. "Well," he said, taking a step toward them. "You see..." He was cut off by a grind and screech, a terrible metallic sound. Call looked up to see the chandelier hurtling toward him, octopus arms and dazzling crystals and all. "Call!" Tamara screamed. The chandelier tumbled brilliantly down toward Cole. Something hit him hard from the side. Pain shot up his leg as he struck the floor and skidded, someone's fingers digging into the back of his jacket. It was Tamara. He saw a blur of her dark hair and yellow dress, and then the chandelier hit the floor beside them. It was like a bomb going off. There was a horrible musical shattering. Shards of crystal exploded toward them. Call tried to curl his body around to block Tamara. He heard her scream, and then suddenly everything was very dark and quiet. For a moment, Cole wondered if he was dead. But it didn't seem likely that the afterlife meant lying on a stone floor next to Tamara, while a black cloud hovered over them. Tamara was gasping, wide-eyed. Cole rolled to the side awkwardly and stared. Aaron was standing over them, his hand outstretched. Dark, nebulous chaos spilled from his palm, forming a wall around Tamara and Cole, drawing into itself the flying bits of broken glass and crystal from the shattered chandelier. Cole tried to call out to Aaron, but the chaos sucked away his voice. He could feel a pull inside him. Cole was Aaron's counterweight, and when Aaron used chaos magic, he felt it. The room beyond Aaron seemed to be wavering. And then Aaron dropped his hand, and the darkness vanished. Cole staggered to his feet, reaching down to pull Tamara up after him. One of her cheeks had been cut by a piece of flying glass and was bleeding. Tamara was clutching his arm in a death grip. But now that she was standing, he thought she might be holding him up. Aaron was leaning against the wall, wide-eyed and breathing hard from exertion. "What?" he said in a raspy voice. "Just happened." Before Cole could answer, the doors flew open, and the other partygoers flooded into the room. Chapter 4 Cole's vision was swimming, making everything a little surreal. People streamed into the room, shocked and gaping. Voices, muttering and yelling, washed across his brain. The chandelier looked like a huge dead animal collapsed in the middle of the room. Most of its arms were smashed off, and broken glass was everywhere in glittering, razor-sharp piles.
"What's going on in here?"
a black-haired man shouted. Cole had a vague memory from the ceremony that he was a teacher at the Collegium, and that his name was Master Sukarno. He was a big man, imposing, and his face was red with fury.
"That was chaos magic!"
He whirled on Aaron and Cole.
"Were you playing around with void magic? How foolish can you be? Chaos magic is strictly controlled everywhere, but forbidden in these rooms. We're underwater and cannot risk the structural integrity of the school being compromised by arrogant children amusing themselves. We could all have drowned."
Tamara looked as if she might explode with rage.
"How dare you!" she said. "No one was playing. We were just standing here in the room when the chandelier came down. It nearly crushed us. If Aaron hadn't done what he did, Cole and I would be dead. Nothing's happened to your precious Collegium. It's fine."
"What did you do to make the chandelier come down?"
demanded Master Tyske, one of the masters at the Magisterium.
"It's been hanging here for 100 years. You three wander into the room and it comes crashing down?" "That's enough."
It was Tamara's father. The Rajavis had levitated themselves over the wreckage to reach their daughter. On the other side of the room, Cole could see Kimaya and Alex standing together, both watching the scene in wide-eyed horror. Tamara's mother dashed toward her daughter, pulling her away from Cole, stroking Tamara's hair and looking at her worriedly. She dabbed at the cut on Tamara's cheek, blotting the blood with a handkerchief. And then Alistair was pushing through the crowd toward Cole. He looked pale, much paler than Cole would have expected. He didn't even bother levitating himself, just kicked a path through the smashed crystals and twisted metal and grabbed Cole, pulling him into his arms.
"Call him,"
he said roughly. Over his shoulder, Cole could see Aaron, still leaning against the wall. There was no one there to blot his cuts, or put their arms around him. He was looking down at his hand, the one he'd used to unleash chaos. with a strange expression on his face.
"My daughter is not a troublemaker," snapped Mr. Rajavi. "In case you've forgotten, we're all here tonight to honor her heroism."
"And the heroism of several other students," added Master North, who had shooed the onlookers back toward the walls so he and Master Rufus could examine the chandelier wreckage.
"I was against the awards ceremony from the start," said Taisuke. "Children shouldn't be rewarded for disobedience, even if the end result turns out positively."
Mentally, Cole filed Master Taisuke into the category of not a fan of mine. It was a growing file.
"Makars especially should be controlled," continued Taisuke. "As we saw from Constantine Madden, a young Makar who doesn't know his own power is the most dangerous thing in the world."
"So are you saying young Makars should be killed, as is the custom in other countries?"
asked Master Rufus. He didn't speak loudly, but his voice was clear, powerful, and carrying.
"Because someone's tried. The chandelier collapsed because the chain was tampered with. Someone was attempting to assassinate the Makars."
"Assassinate?"
Master Sukarno said, deflating slightly. Another teacher at the Collegium made a sharp gesture in the air and said an unfamiliar word. A sudden, deafening roar went through the room. Alistair tightened his grip on Call, Tamara's parents grabbed her, and Master Rufus reached for Aaron. Some kind of alarm system seemed to have gone off. A path lit up suddenly in front of them, and Call could see doors that had been previously invisible illuminated in the walls. He, Aaron, and Tamara were hustled through one of the doors, down a corridor, and into a dimly lit, windowless room full of couches and chairs. Collegium staff raced around, securing the area. Someone brought them blankets and mugs of sugary tea that seemed to be an apology on the part of Master Sukarno for accusing them of being careless delinquents. Anastasia Tarquin appeared with an energy bar and presented it to Aaron, telling him that using that much chaos magic, even with a counterweight, was likely to make him pretty tired. For a moment, Cole thought that meant that maybe the adults would leave them alone. Tamara was huddled on a couch with her parents, and Aaron was curled in an armchair looking miserable and exhausted. But of course, none of that mattered. The moment the staff bustled away, Master Rufus, Master North, Anastasia, and Graves all started asking endless, awkward questions. Why had Call come into the trophy room? Had anyone threatened him at the party? Did he know Aaron would follow him in? There was no point embarrassing himself in front of the teaching staff of the Magisterium and the Collegium, never mind the assembly. So Call lied. Nope. No one knew he was going to the trophy room. Nope. No one knew that Aaron would be with him. He just hated dancing and had been wandering around, checking out all the old stuff. He had totally not been stood up on a maybe date. He was definitely not a loser whose friends had almost been crushed under a chandelier of loserdom. Then, Celia and Jasper were allowed in with their parents trailing behind them. Celia's two mothers, Jasper's mom and dad. Mr. De Winter gave Jasper a little shove and a stern look, as though warning him against doing anything potentially humiliating to their family name. Call sighed, prepared for the worst. It had been bad enough when he'd imagined Celia explaining why she'd decided not to meet him, but explaining it in front of everyone was like an extra scoop of humiliation piled on top of his already overfull sundae of embarrassment. He wondered if it was bad to wish the chandelier had crushed him.
"You're friends with these three,"
Master North said to Celia and Jasper, indicating Call, Tamara, and Aaron. Celia looked pleased to hear this. Jasper looked as if he'd been accused of something.
Did you notice anything tonight? Anyone behaving strangely toward them?
Jennifer Matsui was talking to Call, said Jasper, which is weird, because she's pretty unpopular, and Call is hideous and unpopular.
Jasper caught Alistair glaring at him and flushed.
Just kidding.
But I didn't think they knew each other.
They do a little, said Tamara. Jennifer's friends with my sister.
She's not friends with Call, though, said Celia.
She turned to Call.
Why would you be talking to Jennifer?
Call had had it. She was giving me the note, he said. Your note.
What note?
Celia looked totally baffled.
I didn't write you a note.
Call pulled the paper out of his pocket. So what's this? Celia frowned at it.
But this isn't my handwriting, and it doesn't have my signature or anything, just my name written out. Did she say it was from me?
Then she reread the words and flushed, her neck going red.
You thought you were meeting me? That's why you were in the trophy room?
Tamara scowled. You didn't tell us that.
Colum,
Master North said, his voice stern enough to make everyone else go quiet.
Let's go through what happened today again, very slowly. And this time, you're not going to leave anything out. Do you understand me? This is too important.
Okay, Cole said, chastened. It was just that I...
No excuses, Master North said. Begin.
I was looking for Alistair when Jennifer Matsui gave me a note and said it was from a... pretty blonde girl, Call said, wishing that he knew enough magic to make himself invisible or turn into a mist that could slither through the floorboards. Celia beamed at him.
Really?
Jasper started snickering. At Master Rufus's scowl, he tried to stop, but didn't seem likely to be successful. You're the only blonde girl he knows, snapped Tamara, clearly far less amused.
Nearly being crushed by 10 tons of glass and crystal probably made her less interested in embarrassing Cole.
Master North reached out his hand for the note, and Celia gave it to him. He peered at it for a long moment, then looked at her.
And you didn't write this? You're sure?
Celia shook her head. I didn't. I mean...
She looked at Call unhappily.
I feel really bad someone used my name to try to hurt you.
It was no problem, Call said, trying to seem as if he didn't mind one way or the other. Then he realized that saying that nearly being crushed by a chandelier was no problem was kind of bizarre. He looked helplessly at his dad.
Alistair shrugged. Where is Jennifer Matsui now?
Master Rufus asked, clearly impatient with Cole's dithering.
The person who gave her the note is likely to be the person responsible for tampering with the chandelier, unless she did it herself.
Jennifer, Tamara said, why would she do that?
Aaron frowned. Why would anyone want to kill Cole?
Well, he's a Makar, said Master Rufus. Just like you.
Aaron, Tamara, and Call exchanged quick looks. It was true that Call was a Makar, but in Aaron's question, Call had heard the second question that everyone who knew his secret probably had. The question they couldn't ask or share. Because while everyone else was thinking that the person trying to kill Call had been targeting one of the Makaris, there was another possibility. That the person who had been targeting Call was trying to kill him because he knew what call really was. Maybe if the truth comes out, Call thought, whoever tried to drop a chandelier on me will get an award too. Yeah, with his winning personality, it's hard to imagine who'd want to kill Call, said Jasper. Jasper, said Tamara, but Call, for once, didn't mind it. Jasper, being a jerk to him, was normal, and right now, normal was all he wanted. But that wasn't going to happen. A scream split the room, and then another, and another. Someone in the Collegium was shrieking in terror. Tamara bolted to her feet. Aaron's energy bar went flying. Alistair looked horrified. "What's going on?" demanded Mrs. Rajavi, whirling to look toward the masters. Call was on his feet, too, running toward the door. His leg ached, but he pushed past the pain. Even so, he wasn't as fast as the others. He could hear voices, yells, and cries, all echoing from one end of the Collegium. He followed the others as they ran back through the long corridor and down another hall, back into the war room. The room was full of people. The person who'd been screaming was still screaming. It was Kimaya. One of her hands was clutching the front of her dress, the other hand pointing up. Outside the clear glass, Cole could see the water all around the Collegium, glowing a murky greenish blue. The schools of fish had vanished. There was only the water, and floating in the water was a body. A girl, barefoot, in a dress that was partly wrapped around her like seaweed. Her dark hair drifted in the current. Tamara ran toward her sister, but Alex had already put his arms around Kimaya. There was an expression of horror on his face.
"Jen,"
wept Kimaya into his shirt.
"Jen!"
Cole felt as if his blood was fizzing with ice. The body in the water drifted and turned, and Cole saw two things. First, that there was a long iron dagger plunged into the dead girl's chest. Second, that her face was familiar. It was Jennifer Matsui, and someone had murdered her. Chapter 5. There was a loud explosion.
"Everybody out!"
barked Master Graves, who had climbed onto the war room table. One of his hands was raised, and fire glimmered in his palm.
"Now!"
Master Rufus's face was lined and haggard in the blue light. Cole wondered if he'd known Jen Matsui. What it was like for him to see a student die. He'd been Constantine Madden's teacher. He'd seen many students die. Cole wondered if you got used to it. From Master Rufus's expression, he guessed not. Rufus raised his palm. Light shone from his fingers, illuminating a pathway to the doors.
"Move,"
he said, in a voice that brooked no argument. The other masters and several of the assembly members surged forward, helping to herd the panicking, weeping, and shouting guests out of the war room. People poured into the hallway and then into the great hall. Anastasia Tarquin was there with several masters, including Master Taisuke. They began directing people toward the stairs that led out of the Collegium. Cole saw Celia disappearing up the steps with her moms and wondered if she was okay. Alistair, who had a hand on Cole's shoulder, pushed him in that direction, gesturing for Aaron to follow. Looking back, Cole saw Tamara in some kind of intense conversation with her parents and the De Winters. Mrs. De Winter didn't seem happy, and neither did the Rajavis. Mr. De Winter's expression was strange, though, like he was pleased and didn't want to show it. The crowd parted around them as it moved toward the exit. Assembly members apparently didn't have to follow orders.
"We didn't even get to say goodbye to Tamara," Cole told his father.
"Not now," his father said, pushing with more force. "We need to get out of here before—"
"Alistair," said Master Rufus. "Wait!"
Alistair paused. Cole could sense him tensing with anger. He turned slowly, and so did Cole and Aaron. The floating ropes had risen around them, cordoning off Aaron, Cole, and Alistair.
"You can't just leave," said Master Milagros. "Cole was attacked, and Jennifer murdered. Our apprentices need to be somewhere where we can keep them safe."
"Since you can't even keep the children safe at a party, I think it's a stretch to promise they'll be safe anywhere else just because you'll be there."
Alistair's voice was cold.
"School begins in 3 days," Master Rufus said. "I expect to see both the Makaris there, and so does the Assembly. We will keep them safe. You're going to have to trust us."
Alistair turned to Rufus, some of the rage Cole remembered from the Iron Trial lighting his face.
"It's been a long, long time since I trusted you, Rufus," Alistair said, "and look what happened then."
His hand shot out, and the ropes surrounding them fell away to ash. Sparks curled between his fingers. Cole looked at Aaron with wide eyes.
"Let me know when you have found the person who did this, because until then, I'll trust you as far as I can throw you. Come on, boys."
Cole and Aaron scrambled to follow Alistair as he stalked toward the staircase. Amazingly, people shifted aside to let him pass, even the members of the Assembly, probably because everyone thought he was the person who'd chopped off Constantine Madden's head, and he looked about ready to chop off one of theirs. Cole and Aaron exchanged wide-eyed looks as Alistair dragged them toward the steps.
"Wait!"
Tamara said, running up to them, pulling Jasper behind her like a tugboat. Her parents were still where she'd left them. They'd detached Alex from Kimaya and were comforting their daughter themselves.
"I'm coming with you. We both are."
"What?"
Jasper said.
"No, I didn't think you were serious. Your hot sister needs a shoulder to cry on. I volunteer myself. I would be much better at that than staying in whatever hovel calling his weird dad."
Tamara kicked him savagely, and he lapsed into a sullen silence. Alistair regarded them both with surprise.
"Well, you're welcome, but I don't think your parents would stand for it. I've known them for a long time, and I'd be surprised if they agreed to let you out of their sight."
Tamara firmed her jaw, determination writ in every line of her face.
"We have to take shifts watching over Cole. I told them so, and they agreed with me."
"Shifts?"
Aaron said.
"Someone tried to kill Cole," said Tamara. "That means we can't ever let him out of our sight. Someone has to be watching him constantly, 24 hours a day."
"Even when I'm sleeping?" Cole asked.
Tamara fixed him with a gimlet eye.
"Especially when you're sleeping," she said. "You're defenseless then."
Cole wasn't thrilled about the plan.
"What? No. I don't want Jasper watching me sleep. That's creepy. I don't want anyone watching me sleep."
"We can discuss this later," Alistair said. "If you want to come with us, Tamara, Jasper, we're going now."
Cole looked over at Aaron, but he wasn't paying attention to the discussion. He was staring past them, down the hall at the war room, and beyond, where Jen's body was floating. Cole thought about their carefree summer of building robots and running through sprinklers, and wondered if he'd been foolish to think that just because he'd tricked the mages into believing things had changed, they really had.
"Come on,"
Tamara said to Aaron, touching him on the shoulder and pulling his attention back to the here and now. Call allowed himself to be herded by his father toward the stairs. They passed the drinks table, now overturned, where Jen had handed Call the note. When Alistair got to the stairs, he lifted Call in the air, moving him to glide swiftly and easily just above the steps of the staircase. He did it in a distracted, effortless manner, the same way he'd burned away the velvet ropes, as though he wasn't even really paying attention to what he was doing. Call was shocked. His dad had avoided using magic for so long that Call didn't think he really remembered how. They reached the top of the stairs, and Alistair set Call gently down. He began striding ahead of the four kids, along the jetty, back toward where the car was parked. They had just passed the giant, weird statue of Poseidon when Jasper noticed Alistair's Rolls-Royce Phantom. He gave a long, appreciative whistle that ended abruptly, in a choking noise, when he realized that the car he was admiring belonged to Call's father. "Not what you expected?" Call asked as Alistair opened the door and ushered them into the spacious back seat. For once, Jasper didn't seem to have anything to say. They all piled silently into the car, Call crawling into the front seat beside his dad. As they pulled away from the boardwalk, Call looked back to see a group of mages standing at the edge of the ocean, near the Collegium entrance. As he watched, one of them walked into the water and disappeared.
"Water mages. They're retrieving the girl's body," said Alistair in a grim tone.
Call looked away. It was hard to believe that cheerful Jen, who teased him when she handed him the message, who Jasper had wanted to meet, was dead. The evening was supposed to honor the end of the war, and somehow that made everything that had happened that much more grotesque. But could there ever really be peace, Call thought, when the enemy of death wasn't dead? Somehow, back at the house, Alistair found enough pillows and blankets for all of them. Aaron abdicated his military cot so Tamara could move it into the den, because he was like that. Jasper claimed the couch, though he complained bitterly that it didn't fold out, and accused Havoc of giving the couch fleas. Call, who knew perfectly well that Havoc was flea-free, was back to hating Jasper. Aaron took a pile of blankets, made a makeshift bed on the floor at the foot of Call's, and went to sleep. Call was almost asleep himself when there was a knock on his door. It was Tamara, looking faintly embarrassed. "Do you have anything I could sleep in?" she asked. "All I have is this." She indicated her floaty dress. "And, yeah, I probably shouldn't..." Call realized he was blushing. He wished it could be totally uncomplicated, having a girl best friend. It should be just like it was with Aaron. It shouldn't matter that Tamara was a girl. Still, he felt clumsy and stupid as he fished around in his t-shirt drawer, until he found an oversized shirt that read, "Welcome to the Luray Caverns" on it, in day-glow yellow. He handed it over silently. "Thanks," Tamara said. "I'll wash it and give it back to you." "That's fine. You can keep it. And, Call?"
"I mean, I've never worn it anyway. It's too big and..."
"Call," Tamara said again, looking at him with big, serious eyes. "We're going to keep you safe, okay?" Call wished he could believe it. "Okay," he said. They sat out in the yard the next day. Tamara back in her yellow dress, Jasper in a strange combination of Call's clothes and his own. It was brightly sunny, and Alistair had made them lemonade out of powder, which Tamara was giving the fish eye. Cole suspected she didn't drink a lot of reconstituted things. Jasper was looking around haughtily at Cole's small backyard and slightly overgrown grass. Not that Alistair seemed to notice. He was seated on a rock, tinkering with a broken alarm clock. Even though there were digital alarm clocks and cell phones nowadays, people would pay decent money for old-fashioned phones and other gadgets that had been fixed up to run well.
"So what does it mean?" said Tamara. "If someone's trying to hurt Cole because he's the..."
She swallowed. "Enemy of death?" Jasper volunteered.
"I don't think it's a good idea to go around saying enemy of death a lot," said Aaron.
"We should come up with a code name. Like Captain Fishface."
Havoc barked.
Cole agreed with him that the name sucked.
"Why Captain Fishface?"
"Well, you have a fishy look," said Jasper.
"Plus, no one would ever guess what we meant because there's nothing scary about it."
"Fine, whatever," said Tamara, sounding as if she thought the whole thing was a waste of time. "So who might know Cole is Captain Fishface?"
"I refuse to be called that," Cole said, "especially in light of recent events." Tamara groaned as though this conversation was tormenting her even more than it was tormenting Cole.
"Okay, what do you want to be called?"
"How about Commander Pinhead?" Aaron asked.
Jasper laughed, spitting out his lemonade. Cole put his head in his hands and took a deep breath, drinking in the smells of summer, the perfume of warm earth, cut grass, and machine oil. There was no winning. He was going to wind up with a dumb name no matter what. "Captain Fishface is fine."
"Good," Tamara said, rolling her eyes. "Now can we talk about who might know about Cole?"
"His father," Jasper said, and they all glanced at Alistair, who seemed oblivious.
He was whistling a jaunty tune in a slightly off-key manner.
"My dad is not trying to kill me," Cole said.
A year ago, he hadn't been so sure of that. But he was sure now. "And I don't think any of you are either, even you, Jasper." "Who else?"
"Did any of us tell anyone?"
Tamara asked, looking around at them.
"Who would I tell?"
Jasper asked, and then blanched at their prolonged stares.
"No, okay, I didn't tell anyone. It's too big a secret, and I would get in trouble too."
"Me neither,"
Aaron said. Tamara sighed.
"I didn't, but I thought I'd better ask. Okay, so then there's Master Joseph. He's got to be pretty mad at Cole."
"I thought he needed Cole," said Jasper. "Isn't Captain Fishface, like, his whole reason for being?"
Aaron grinned. "I think he hoped that either Cole would be a lot more obedient than he is, or that he could use Cole to bring back Captain Fishface with all his memories intact."
Cole, who thought pretty much the same thing, shuddered.
"He might blame me for Drew's death."
"He probably blames me too," said Aaron, "if it makes you feel any better."
Drew was Master Joseph's son. He'd gone to the Magisterium, pretending to be a regular student, but his real reason for being there had been to get close to Cole. Drew had even helped his father kidnap Aaron, and then swung him over a cage with a Chaos Elemental inside. The same Chaos Elemental that, ironically, wound up killing Drew. But Cole had to admit that he'd had something to do with it as well.
"Okay," Tamara said. "Top of our suspect list, Master Joseph."
Cole shook his head. "I don't know. If he is out to get me, why not use the Alkahest? And, well, I just don't think he's ready to give up yet. He tried to save my life back in the tomb. I think he's still got hope that I am going to turn out..." More like Captain Fishface.
What about Warren? Aaron asked. They all just stared at him for a long moment. Cole looked at him the way that Tamara had looked at her lemonade.
You think a lizard is trying to kill me? And he faked a note from Celia?
He's an elemental, and he was in the service of the Devoured who gave us that creepy prophecy.
Aaron sighed. Okay, it was a pretty out there theory.
It's okay, Tamara said. We have to think outside the box. No matter how unlikely, we've got to put all our ideas on the table. Or at least on this stretch of grass.
We don't have any suspects, Cole said. We don't have any ideas. We don't even know why I was being targeted. Maybe it was because I'm a Makar. Maybe it had nothing to do with being Captain Fishface. Maybe the person who tried to smush me with a chandelier was the same person who let out automatones to kill all of us.
That's what the mages are going to assume, Tamara sighed.
I guess it could be true.
We're just going to have to stick together, said Aaron, smiling up at the blue sky.
And we're going to figure this out. We're heroes, right? We've got medals. We can do this.
Eventually, Cole got out a pack of cards and they played a couple of rounds of a game that involved slapping one another's hands. They talked about going back to the Magisterium and what they hoped to accomplish that year. Havoc chased several bees, snapping at them until they buzzed lazily out of his reach. As the afternoon wore on, Stebbins arrived with suitcases for Tamara and a message from her parents that could only be delivered in private. Jasper called home on one of Alistair's restored chrome candlestick landline phones and then glumly reported that his family would send his things directly to the Magisterium. Cole wondered if he'd tried to convince them to rescind permission for him to be there. Cole wondered if his parents had forced him to come along in the first place, and then quickly pushed away the thought.
"What are you looking at?" Jasper asked him gruffly when he noticed Cole staring in his direction.
Nothing, Cole said.
The last person he needed to be worrying about was Jasper.
That night, Alistair grilled steak and they ate it outside, on paper plates, along with buttered corn, snap peas, and cold slices of watermelon. Tamara threw watermelon at Aaron, who got seeds down his shirt. Havoc stood on top of Jasper when Jasper refused to give him a piece of steak. They took turns seeing who could make the sparks above the banked coals on the grill dance. It was almost like a party. Except for the specter of Jen's death, which kept them from laughing too loudly, or forgetting for too long that they could be next.
2 days later, Alistair drove them all to the Magisterium. Cole sat in the front seat, gazing out the window, while Aaron dozed in the back seat. Tamara was listening to music on her phone, and Jasper was reading the most recent comic book he'd found in Cole's room and gotten obsessed with. Havoc was stretched out across their laps, dead asleep.
"You let me know if you want to come home," Alistair said to Cole for what must have been the millionth time. "You've done enough. You know plenty of magic, enough to control your abilities. You don't need the Magisterium."
Cole remembered the way Graves had insisted that Master Rufus give the assembly updates on how Cole and Aaron were doing. He remembered all the references to countries where mages with the ability to control chaos were killed or had their magic bound, even though the party was supposed to be in their honor. While Constantine Madden had been alive, Makaris were awesome. They were desperately needed weapons. They meant the end of the war. But, with Constantine Madden dead,
Aaron and Cole were just a reminder of that war and how it could happen again. Cole doubted he would be allowed to quit attending the magisterium, no matter what Alistair thought. "It's okay, Dad," Cole said. "I'll be fine." As they neared the magisterium, the roads grew narrower and more winding. They were completely unmarked. Only those who knew where the magisterium was could find it. Cole had often wondered what magic kept hikers and ordinary townspeople from nearby, from happening across it.
Something advanced, he guessed. Something to do with the earth.
The trees grew thick along the sides of the road. Cole couldn't help thinking about the order of disorder. It was clear that the assembly knew about them and tolerated them, but he couldn't quite figure out why. There was a beeping sound up ahead, bringing Cole's attention back to the road. They pulled up into a clearing where a school bus had already arrived. Students were pouring out of it, carrying suitcases and duffel bags. The main gate of the school was open. Cole could see mages in their somber black, and various students already wearing their uniforms, red, white, blue, green, and gray, mixing with kids who had just arrived and were still wearing jeans and t-shirts. Aaron woke up, and he and Jasper and Tamara started poking one another, leaning out the windows as they recognized friends from previous years. Celia threw them a guarded smile as she headed through the gates with Gwenda, who was in her apprentice group with Jasper. Alex Strike was talking to Anastasia Tarquin, who had pulled up next to the school bus in a white Mercedes. Cole had seen the car before. She'd picked up Alex from the Rajavis last year. Cole had nearly forgotten. Anastasia Tarquin was Alex's stepmother. Anastasia emerged from the car, looking elegant, as usual, in a white pantsuit. Alex was gesturing at her, looking annoyed, as a black van pulled up beside them. The back opened and two muscular young men leaped out, much to the delight of quite a few of the students of the magisterium. They began carrying large pieces of furniture through the gates, a desk, a lamp, an immaculately white sofa.
"What's going on there?"
Alistair wondered aloud, as they all piled out of the rolls. Cole stretched to get the kinks out of his muscles. So did Havoc. "The assembly posted Anastasia at the school to keep an eye on things," said Alex, who had abandoned his stepmother to come say hello. He high-fived Cole and Aaron and smiled at Tamara. "She's moving into Master Lemuel's old office. She takes this stuff really seriously and, well, she also overpacks."
"Is she going to be looking for the spy?"
Alistair asked.
"I don't think we're supposed to be talking about that," said Alex, looking over at Jasper worriedly. "I mean, no one is supposed to know."
Alistair raised his eyebrows.
"Good thing she's being so discreet."
Alex looked back at his stepmother, who was supervising the carrying of several large steamer trunks into the caves. They were covered with old-fashioned stamps from faraway places: Mexico, Italy, Australia, the French Riviera, Provence, Cornwall.
"She's got a cover story about making sure everything goes smoothly, ridding chaos-ridden animals from the forest."
Cole put one hand on Havoc's back in what he hoped would be a reassuring manner. Havoc looked up at him, tail beginning to wag. A wave of anger passed through Cole at the idea that anyone would want to hurt Havoc. They better not, he thought. Alistair turned to Cole.
"If you change your mind, you know how to get a hold of me,"
he said, then hugged Cole tightly, a little too tightly, actually, making Cole worry for his ribs.
"Bye, Dad."
Cole squeaked. Even if he had been squeezed a little too hard, this was the first time his father was okay with his attending the magisterium. It was a great feeling. Tamara had gone over and found Kimaya and was laughing with her. Jasper had headed towards Celia and Gwenda. Only Aaron had waited for Cole. He gave him a slanted smile, and Cole wondered how hard it was for Aaron to be around other people's families all the time. "Give me that," Aaron said, slinging Cole's duffel bag over his shoulders and lifting his own luggage in his other hand. He started toward the school, seemingly not even weighed down a little bit by what he was carrying. Cole walked behind him, stiff-legged from the trip, and thought about all the ways that life wasn't fair. The caverns were humid, but cool. Water dripped down from the jagged icicle stalactites to the melted candle stalagmites below them. Sheets of gypsum hung from the ceiling, resembling banners and streamers from some long-forgotten party. Cole walked past it all, past the damp flowstone and the pools shining with mica, where pale fish darted. He was so used to it that he no longer found it to be particularly creepy. It was just the place he went to school, as familiar to him now as the bang of metal lockers and the squeak of his sneakers on the gymnasium floor had been 3 years ago. He wondered if they'd spot Warren, potential assassin, and if he'd have something creepy to say to them. But the little lizard was nowhere to be seen. Cole used his wristband, with all its new stones, to wave his way into their rooms. Aaron set down Cole's luggage on their couch with a groan that made Cole feel a little better about his own abilities and a little more guilty about Aaron's generosity. The room looked smaller than it had the year before, and it took him a moment to realize it was because he'd grown, not because the room had shrunk. The door opened and Tamara marched in, dragging her suitcases behind her.
"I didn't know where you two had gone. You just wandered off," she announced,
which was completely unfair because she was the one who had wandered off, Cole thought. She turned to Aaron.
"And you know we're not supposed to leave Cole alone."
"I didn't," Aaron pointed out.
"Humph,"
Tamara said, before she stomped into her room. Cole went off to his bedroom, which felt cold and dusty and unused, the way it always did at the beginning of a school year. He flung his suitcase open and put on his uniform, blue for third year. He snapped his cuff shut and looked at himself in the mirror on the wardrobe. There was a time when he'd been short enough that he could see himself completely in the glass. Now, his head passed the top of the frame and he had to crouch. He went out into the common room and found Aaron and Tamara waiting in their uniforms. After promising Havoc some leftovers, they trooped off to the refectory for dinner. Everyone but the Iron Year students, who were coming from their trials and usually got to eat in their rooms, were settling into their old tables and choosing from among the culinary options. Tonight's menu was a purplish mash, large mushrooms cut up so they seemed almost like slices of bread and slathered with some yellow paste, and three kinds of lichen, bright green, brown, and dark red. Cole piled everything on his plate, along with a cup of liquid with a thin film of algae on it. It was creepy how delicious the lichen was to Cole. He forked it into his mouth like a starving man and wondered if it was possible for the lichen to have some sinister purpose. Like brainwash him into eating so much of it that he would become an entirely lichen-based life form. Was that a thing that could happen? He gave his next forkful a long, suspicious look before shoving it into his face. Jasper sat down next to Cole, as though they were friends or something.
"So what's the plan?"
"What are you talking about?" Cole asked.
"Oh, never mind,"
Jasper said with a roll of his eyes, then turned to Tamara. I don't know why I even bothered asking him. What's the plan?
We can't talk here, she said, leaning in and dropping her voice.
Cole couldn't help noticing that the cut under her eye was still visible. A thin, scabbed line. Every time he saw it, he thought of her fingers on his jacket, pulling him to safety. He thought of what he owed her. He owed all his friends so much. He didn't know how he'd ever pay them back. Aaron, who'd been talking to Rafe, another Bronze Year student, about the robots he and Cole had built over the summer, seemed to notice something important was going on and broke off his conversation to join theirs.
Tomorrow, Tamara said, after dinner. Let's meet in the library. We can discuss then.
What are we talking about? Celia asked, sitting down across from Cole, her plate full of purple mush. Is something going on?
No, Aaron and Jasper said at the same time.
Sure. That's not suspicious or anything.
She stood back up. If you didn't want me to sit here, you just had to say so. I'll go somewhere else. Cole sprang to his feet.
Don't,
he said, before he could think of how to persuade her to stay.
We were just talking about the gallery. But we hadn't decided to go, but I mean, we could. Go, that is.
Are you asking me to go to the gallery with you?
Celia inquired, her expression unreadable. The gallery was where two people went when they were on
a date. She is talking about a date. She thinks I'm asking her on a date.
I don't know,
Cole stammered.
Well, maybe you should figure it out,
Celia said, tossing her blonde hair and stalking off to sit with Rafe, Kai, and Gwenda.
The gauntlet is in your court, buddy,
Jasper announced the moment she was out of earshot.
You're mixing your metaphors, said Cole. It gives me a headache.
Can we talk about saving Cole's actual life instead of saving his love life?
Said Tamara, looking fed up.
Until tomorrow night, one of us stays with Cole at all times. It'll probably have to be either me or Aaron, because if it's you, Jasper, everyone will think it's weird, since you don't like Cole.
Sure he does, said Aaron, looking surprised. We're all friends.
Whatever, said Tamara. Tomorrow, after dinner, library. Bring some good ideas.
She glanced over.
Alex Strike is gesturing at me. I'll be right back.
She stood up and caught hold of Aaron's sleeve.
Come on! He probably wants to say hi to you, too.
What?
Aaron began, as he was yanked off his feet and tugged toward the table where Alex, Kimaya, and their other Gold Year friends were sitting. They seemed like a somber group. Cole couldn't blame them. Losing a friend like that.
So do you like Celia or not?
Jasper asked, gnawing a piece of lichen. He had gotten a new slick-looking haircut before the awards ceremony, and a piece of dark hair fell into his eyes.
How is that your business?
Cole asked.
Maybe I'll ask her out, said Jasper. Did you ever think of that?
Cole hadn't. He goggled.
Do what you want, he said finally. I guess you don't care.
Jasper's eyes gleamed with amusement.
Maybe because you like Tamara?
Jasper!
Do you?
Like Tamara? She's my best friend,
Cole said between his teeth.
That doesn't mean anything.
Jasper twirled his fork between his fingers.
People like each other all the time in apprentice groups. Look at Kamaya and Alex Strike, or, you know,
me and Celia.
You could totally like Tamara. What does it matter?
Cole exploded to his own surprise. He glared at Jasper and in a low voice said,
Don't you get it? It doesn't matter.
She'll always like Aaron better.
Jasper's eyes widened.
Whoa, he said.
Looks like I hit on an awkward truth there.
Cole's head was swimming. Dimly, through the crowd, he could see Aaron and Tamara coming toward them. They were laughing together, like they always did.
What I just said.
Cole looked at Jasper.
Don't repeat it.
Jasper leaned back in his chair.
Don't worry, Colum, he said with a sneer. I keep all your secrets.
Chapter 6 Classes that first day were outside in the blazing sun, sitting on a half-circle of boulders. Master Rufus felt that since the assembly planned to start creeping around the woods, they needed to use the outside of the magisterium as much as possible until that happened. Cole missed the cool of the caves. His shirt was quickly soaked with sweat. Even the part on his head felt like it was getting a sunburn. Aaron's nose and cheeks had turned red, and Tamara was wearing one of her notebooks like a hat.
"Welcome to your bronze year at the magisterium,"
Master Rufus said, pacing back and forth in front of them, his bald head shining.
"You may not be the most trouble of all the apprentice groups I've ever taught, but you are certainly up there. Let's try to approach this year a little differently."
Considering that Master Rufus was referring to a previous apprentice group that had included Captain Fishface himself, that really was saying something.
"We all just got medals," Tamara said, and received a stern look for interrupting him.
She went on anyway.
"We're the opposite of trouble."
Master Rufus's eyebrows did something complicated, rising and wiggling all at once.
"Nonetheless, let's try to make sure that none of you get kidnapped or go on rescue missions or adopt more chaos-ridden animals or leave the school for any reason."
None of them had anything to say to that.
"This year, we will be learning about personal responsibility.
You might not think that sounds like a particularly magical lesson, but this is the year that Constantine began his experiments with Master Joseph, trying to discover a path to immortality.
It's the year when you leave behind the basics and begin to focus on what you might specialize in. So we want to make sure that every student, but especially Cole and Aaron, consider what the wider implications of those specialties will be. It is a worthy goal to wonder about the limits of chaos magic. It is irresponsible and corrupt to use methods that put lives in danger to discover those limits. Like all schools, we are always interested in learning, in research, in pushing the limits of knowledge, but we must balance that with our duty to protect the world, even from ourselves. And,"
Master Rufus went on,
"I want you to remember that you have walked through the gates of magic early in each of the preceding years. That should teach you not that you're better than other students,